This is Archive Atlanta, episode 257, Piedmont Hospital.
You're listening to Archive Atlanta, a history podcast where each week I'll be sharing a story about the people, places, and events that shape the history of the city of Atlanta. I'm your host, local tour guide, and total history nerd, Victoria Lamos.
Hey everyone, happy Friday. So this week we're talking about Piedmont Hospital. From its start as a small sanitarium in 1904, the doctor who started it, its numerous expansions, the move to Peachtree Street, and the impact it had on Atlanta. I've talked about Atlanta's early healthcare system way back in episode 26 about Grady. Grady was a public hospital intended to care for Atlantans that could not afford it. But for those that could afford it, private care in the home was the most common scenario before private hospitals were opened. The post-Civil War era also gave birth to the sanatorium or sanitarium, both derived from Latin words sanatorius or sanitas, which means health-giving or health. Now, while the two words are used interchangeably, sanitarium is primarily used in the U.S., and the facilities began as a place to treat those with tuberculosis. In Atlanta, many also treated opiate addictions and alcoholism. Now, while I do have an episode on the city's sanitariums on my list, today we're going to talk about one in particular. Dr. Ludwig Amster was born in 1863 in Austria. He studied medicine in Vienna, and then once he immigrated to New York City, he finished his medical degree there. By 1890, he was living in Macon, Georgia, and had established an excellent reputation as a physician. After 3 years of practice, he moved to Atlanta in 1892 and set up an office in the Hirsch Building. In 1893, he married Fanny Denkelspiel, and the couple was very active in Atlanta's Jewish life, as well as its music scene. Amster would travel to Europe every year, like a continuing education almost, to learn more about medicine, and it was during this time that he decided to focus on gastrointestinal specialties. The couple lived on Washington Street, which is a prominent neighborhood that is now the downtown connector. It was also a heavily Jewish neighborhood, and the area was also lined with mansions, one of them being the home of Charles Swift, patent medicine man famous for the SSS tonic. He had built his 14-room home at the corner of Capitol Avenue and Crumley Street in 1875, and he lived there until he died in 1890. So it was a rental property that the Amsters used to walk by until about 1904, when Ludwig and Fanny purchased it to open their sanitarium. In November of 1904, the newspapers announced the opening of Dr. Amster's private sanitarium at 267 Capitol Avenue, a place to treat diseases of the stomach and intestines. By August of 1905, a charter was filed by Ludwig and Fanny to incorporate the Piedmont Sanitarium. The next month, it was formally renamed and staffed with two extra doctors, Dr. Floyd Wilcox McRae Sr. and Dr. R.L. Maloney. McRae was born in 1861 in Telfair County, Georgia, graduated from the Atlanta Medical College in 1885, where he later returned as a professor. He also married Fanny Collier, who was a descendant of one of Atlanta's oldest white families. By 1891, he served as the president of the Atlanta Medical Society, and by 1905, he was in charge of surgery at the Piedmont Sanatorium. His assistant, Dr. Maloney, was the former house surgeon at Grady Hospital. I covered nursing history in episode 232, but Piedmont's nursing school started in 1905 with five women in the first class, specifically chosen based on their character and previous medical experience. The school actually operated until 1983 and graduated over 2,000 nurses. So in 1908, the Piedmont Sanatorium is listed as being sold in the papers, but it really appears to be more of an ownership restructuring. Dr. Amster is still an owner, but he is joined by Dr. E. Bates Block and Dr. Michael Hoke as owners, and then they add more doctors to the staff later. Dr. Bates Block was an Atlanta native who specialized in nervous diseases, and he later taught at Emory, and Dr. Hoke was an orthopedic surgeon who would go on to found the Scottish Rite Hospital. James Edgar Paulin joined the team shortly after graduating medical school, and he served as the house physician and the pathologist. He later actually becomes the private physician of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So needless to say, and I really couldn't get into everything these men have done, these physicians are the best of the best, not just for their time, but really in like medical history in Atlanta. They were doing groundbreaking things, really cutting edge, like really seen as the top of their field. As Atlanta's population grew, reaching more than 150,000 by 1910, the Piedmont Sanatorium grew with it. In 1909, they announced plans for a $40,000 addition designed by architect A. Tenney Brown. The brick home would be remodeled along with the addition of a three-story concrete building. They even added a hydropathic adjunct, which was essentially a wing of European-style baths and massage therapy, both very novel concepts for that time in the South. Piedmont Sanitarium treated many of the who's who of Atlanta, judges, politicians, pioneer citizens, you name it. The majority of the surgeries, at least the ones reported in the paper, were to treat appendicitis. And that's because Dr. McRae made many contributions to the early treatment of appendicitis. He was far above his time in those articles. During World War I, 17 nursing school graduates served with Emory University Unit, which was overseas. And Dr. Annie L. Sawyer joined the hospital as an obstetrician. Sawyer was born in Alabama in 1865, and she graduated from the Women's Medical College of Philadelphia. She was one of the South's first female physicians and more than likely the first female obstetrician in Atlanta. After the war, there's many doctors that had served in the medical corps, but now they needed hospital assignments. And one of these was actually Dr. Floyd McRae Jr. So McRae Sr. had three sons. Two became physicians and one was a business that I can't remember. I couldn't figure it out. Now, at this point, the senior McRae is really struggling with mental health issues. He had spent pretty much all of 1920 at Johns Hopkins for the treatment of what was then called melancholia or melancholy. Sadly, in August of 1921, he died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound at the age of 59. And he had just returned to Piedmont doing surgeries 3 to 4 months before that. In 1922, Piedmont Sanitarium built a 5-story annex, bringing the total numbers of available beds from 75 to about 135. This added specific facilities for eye, ear, nose, and throat, children's diseases, nervous patients, medical, surgical, and maternity patients. In 1923, the board of directors decided to change the name to Piedmont Hospital, and that change became official in 1925 with a charter amendment. The officers listed under that charter were William Schallenberger, Ludwig Amster, Charles Dowman, H. Cliff Sauls, Floyd McRae Jr., and Lawson Thornton. Only 3 years later, Dr. Amster sold his shares and he retired to New York. So those that knew him well say he never really got over the tragic death of McRae Sr., and the two men had worked together really to bring the hospital to where it was. Through the 1930s, the hospital installed telephones in each patient room, supposedly the first in the nation to do so. They added a physical therapy department, which was really just a renaming of that therapeutic bath wing. By 1937, Piedmont Hospital was serving more than 4,000 people annually. They had 150 doctors on staff, and they had remodeled that 1922 addition. One of the biggest things that happens in 1937 is the Georgia legislature passes the Hospital Services Nonprofit Corporation Act, which allows hospitals to become not-for-profit. This is really, it was super interesting. It's probably another episode, but medical debt was becoming a thing. And so this was an interesting kind of idea to tackle this, was letting hospitals be nonprofits. In 1940, Piedmont's board met with an attorney to discuss their options, and by that summer, nonprofit status was granted. The Piedmont Stock Corporation dissolved, and Piedmont Hospital Incorporated was born. In 1944, plans were unveiled for a new million-dollar Piedmont hospital on the land formerly called Deerland, the Jack Spaulding Estate on Peachtree Road. The board approved the land purchase, and preliminary architectural sketches were done by Hal Hentz. But then nothing really happens. So I think there's a couple of things at play. I assume World War II played a huge part. Many male physicians were involved in the war efforts. There were rationing, like electricity rationing, sugar rationing, ice rationing, that, it's funny enough, Piedmont actually dealt with during the First World War. But again, all of these, I think, maybe delayed some of these plans. By the end of World War II, it's clearly evident that the Capitol Avenue facility was inadequate to serve the 302,000 residents of Atlanta. In 1952, they buy more land adjacent to the Spaulding Estate tract that they already owned, and they started fundraising. So the initial cost estimate for this new hospital was $3.5 million, $1.5 million of which was going to be raised through charity. And this was like a charity army. I can't even explain it. Men and women from prestigious social clubs, they like formed committees and groups. They also, the newspaper put out this like series of articles about how, you know, sad and inadequate and overcrowded the original facilities are, you know, how people are being turned away at the door. Like it was a mastermind PR campaign. On November 29th, 1954, the official groundbreaking took place with Governor Talmadge using the ceremonial shovel and sharing the story of how his father was a patient at the original facility. Even more fascinating is that Hugh Spaulding, who was, I think, like head of the Georgia Medical Commission Board or something, he had actually lived in that house that was on that property. And then two more full circle moments, Floyd McRae Jr. is the administrator at the time or in charge of the hospital, and again, that his father really had started. And then the last fun fact is that his father had married Collier, who was a descendant of the Collier family that owned all of that land that had sold it to the Spaulding family. So, like, lots of full circle moments happening. The new building was six stories with four wings, 300 beds, nine operating rooms, three delivery rooms, and two emergency rooms. The architects were listed as J. Warren Armistead, Jr., M. Oliver Sagas, and Philip T. Schutze. The builders were the Beers Construction Company. It was ready for patients in March of 1957, and on March 26, a convoy of 15 ambulances lined up at the old Piedmont Hospital on Capitol Avenue, and 64 patients made their way to their new hospital rooms. The old complex stood until 1960, and there were many calls from the community for it to retain some kind of medical purpose. A lot of people were like, you know, we liked having this on the south side. Can we please keep it? Some people think it should be a nursing home. I think one of the ideas was a mental health facility. But alas, it was purchased by the Atlanta Housing Authority and then was demolished to make room for the new municipal stadium. In 1967, Piedmont opened the first coronary unit in Georgia. In 1971, it built a 1,000-car parking deck. In 1973, they added an 80-doctor professional building. Its largest expansion came in 1976 with the addition of 126 acute surgical beds, 42 extended care beds, a small respiratory, intensive care, and critical care unit, six more operating rooms, a same-day surgical center, and tons of administrative space. In 1982, it was the first of 12 hospitals worldwide to install the GE9800 high-resolution CAT scanner. So about 4 years ago, if you drove this area, you definitely remember this construction, the Marcus Tower opened, which was a 16-story tower that added 408 private rooms, 12 suites, 10 cardiovascular operating rooms, and it was designed by HKS. The project also included three levels of underground parking and a pedestrian plaza. And so the tower is now home to the Piedmont Heart Institute, which has one of two heart transplant programs in Georgia. So there you have it, the story of Piedmont Hospital. Thank you everyone for listening. Remember to leave a rating and or a review wherever you listen to the podcast. There's also a link on the show notes if you want to support my work. I hope everyone has a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.